Bush and Richie's Daily Takeaway.
Bush and Richie's Daily Takeaway.
Absolute Radio.
James May, welcome back to Home Time, a dear friend of the show. We might give you the keys to the studio in a symbolic sense. Yeah.
Could cut them if he didn't.
He really could.
Cut the keys, yes.
I've
never done that, but I'd like to have a go.
let's talk about your ace new TV show, James May's Shed Full of Ideas, Tuesdays, 9 p.m. on Quest. You're back in your Wiltshire workshop to help fix Britain's biggest bugbears. And there are loads of amazing, you know, good inventions in the show. It's a fantastic show. But what, in your opinion, is the worst invention? Is there an invention that you hate? Let's just get that straight
in history.
Of all time.
God. Well, the gallows, I suppose. Pretty bad.
That's a bad one, isn't it?
Yeah, bad inventions. You've sprung that on me a bit. There's a lot of things I dislike, but that I wouldn't really call inventions.
Any car-related things that we don't need that?
We don't need... I think this is going to make me sound old, I know. I don't think cars need lane keeping, which is now mandatory, and it has to be a two-stage process to turn it off. And I've got two cars that have it, and weirdly, I set off... and I haven't turned it off, and it starts tweaking the steering wheel for me, and I think, no, I'm driving the car.
I'm in
charge. Not a man in a laboratory somewhere in Japan or wherever it is. I don't know if that actually counts as an invention.
I'd say that's an invention, and it's a very annoying one. When you've got a car telling you that it thinks you're deviating and you know you're not, that's really irritating.
I remember I had it on a car that we got, and I didn't know that that was a thing, and I felt like ghostly hands were...
That's exactly what it is. And I think we're being a bit tyrannised by it, because in some respect, all these things, I mean, it started with radar cruise control, and it's now on things like lane keeping and lane warning and distance control and so on. They are the building blocks of the self-driving car, and we're doing some of the R&D for them. There's that aspect of it. But the other one is that it's supposedly a safety thing, and I get it. I understand why it's potentially safer, but... It's almost as if, how can I put this? It's the business of safety, because it is a business in itself, has effectively controlled what the manufacturers put on the car, because they put it on there in order to score the points on the safety rating. So I don't know that anybody really wants it. I'm not convinced that anybody actually wants self-driving cars. Even though I love the idea, and I've been in some, and it's fascinating, and I can see a purpose for them, and I get the argument that they will ultimately make cars perfectly safe, theoretically. But I don't lie awake, you know, dreaming of having one like I used to lie awake dreaming of having a TR6. It's just not the same. Or maybe I'm just old.
In Shed Load of Ideas, there's some fantastic ideas that we'll come on to shortly. What would you say... And I think this is going to be something, your answer will be helpful to a lot of people, even those that aren't in sheds. What would you say is the enemy of having a good idea?
The enemy of having a good idea?
What gets in the way of people having ideas? Because you obviously have the ability to let your brain creatively run riot, not just with TV shows, but with fixes and ideas that come out of the shed.
Well, I mean, the first enemy is things like drink, I suppose, or overeating, because those things make you lazy and complacent, and I tend towards those things very easily. but the other enemy, I suppose, is actually a lack of, and I suffered this for many years, a lack of self-belief or self-confidence, especially in doing practical things. So people will, you know, I've done this to people where they say, this doesn't work, and this bit's broken, and I'm going to have to throw it away. And I say, no, I can make a new one of those on the lathe, or Simi can weld that back together for you. You know, and people don't know, or they don't have the confidence to believe that these things are possible. You can make things. Most people can make fairly simple things. They could make a basic bit of furniture or a gate or something like that. It's not that difficult, but you have to believe in it. And in yourself.
Do you think our CDT or technology at school was good enough, though? Because all I kind of made was a pencil case that was like a hedgehog, like a wooden hedgehog.
I did a pyjama case that was shaped like a rabbit.
Is that helping us with stuff forwards?
I did a dice. I basically just sanded the corners of a cube.
Right, but was it perfectly cubic?
Yes.
Well, that's a good start.
Well,
that's
there you go. We'll put ourselves down.
I don't really know what... When I was at school, you did woodwork and metalwork, and that was a boys' thing, and the girls did needlework and domestic science. And then, you know, we'd started to become... This is in the late 70s. We started to become a little bit more liberated and inclusive. So in the final year, Wednesday afternoons, which was always activities, as it was called, you could choose. So I never did any cooking, but I did have a go at doing some needlework stuff, which is when I made the pyjama case shaped like a rabbit, but that never had any eyes because we didn't have the glass eyes in the sewing box.
It's kind of horrific.
So it was actually a pyjama sphere with another sphere attached to it. What was the point I was going to make? Oh, yeah, so we used to have those distinctions, but I think these days it's rather different, isn't it? They treat everything as one discipline, and you do a bit of 3D printing and a bit of... I don't think they do things like lathe work anymore, which we were allowed to
do. The game's gone. The lathe work game's gone.
Yeah, but it was hideously dangerous when I look back on it. We could have done ourselves all sorts of injuries on those things. So we had no idea what we were doing.
Well, I mean, the TV show is a heartwarming nod to that kind of spirit of invention on which this country is based. And there's been some great inventors here in the United Kingdom, but also around the world. A hypothetical situation for you, James. If you were to go out to the pub for a daytime drinking session, even though we've just mentioned that drinking is the enemy of coming up with good ideas, if you were to go out with two inventors from any point in history, who would you love to sit around the table with and have a couple of pints of real ale?
Well, given my... I suppose the Wright brothers or Sir George Cayley or somebody related to aviation.
The guy who invented the dance, the Cayley?
No, he was the first person to work out the basic physics of gliding.
Oh, really. Right.
I mean, that's the simplistic version, but yeah, basically it was him. So something to do with flight. And then I'd quite like to have somebody like Berners-Lee there. I would like to talk about what would become the digital revolution, which I think is still the most significant thing that's happened in my life, this ability to communicate and share so enormously, I mean, with everybody alive, theoretically. And I'd like all of those people to know if they had any vision of what would become of their thinking, because it's enormous. I mean, it's unthinkably enormous. But you could probably name all sorts of people. I mean, Thomas Newcomen and his atmospheric engine that became the steam engine that powered, you know, the Industrial Revolution. Well, not really. I mean, it had started before then, but it invigorated it greatly. So people like that. I'd also like to, I don't know who it is, but I'd like to speak to the person who invented the Mooley grater. Of which I've always been an enormous fan. I have an ancient one that I think belonged to it was certainly my mother's, it may have been my grandparents before that, but I've restored it twice.
So what is it? Just explain what that is.
The Mooley grater is the one, it has a rotating drum with a handle.
Oh, yeah.
And then sort of two arms, and you lift the top arm and you put the piece of, you have to cut the cheese into small, or radishes or whatever, and you put that in the little sort of hopper and then press down with the top arm and turn the handle and it comes out the same.
I feel like you might get imposter syndrome sat next to the Wright brothers.
It's endlessly engaging, and every time I use it I feel a little frisson of excitement. I get the grater out.
Does wonder what the Wright brothers and Tim Berners-Lee would make of making chips with a tennis racket and a cannon.
Not much, I suspect.
Not much, no. I, one of the other things about ideas, and we talked earlier about the enemy of a good idea, I think one of the things that you do need is obviously support. And I wonder how important is your partner's support. When we're at home and someone goes, what have you got going on today? At the beginning of a day as you're having breakfast and someone says, I'm making chips with a tennis racket. I must imagine there's the odd eye roll.
Yes, and not just from Sarah.
No.
I mean, it tends to happen when people say, what did you do today at work? And I say to my friends who work in quite serious things like IT and banking and all this sort of thing. I said, well, we fired some potatoes through a tennis racket to see if they turned into chips. And when I say, I think, What an idiotic thing to do.
But doing God's work.
You're a grown man. Yeah. But, I mean, that's an example of something. There isn't really a case for making chips for the pub using a tennis racket and a cannon. But it was just... I always refer to it as the Edison light bulb thing. So when Thomas Edison was working on his light bulb, he tried all sorts of combinations of materials for the filament and gases to go inside the globe to work out what would work. And he had dozens of failures, but there was one that failed, and somebody, I can't remember the exact words, but somebody said to him, well, that doesn't work. No, he said, that's no good. And he said, no, it's very useful because now we definitely know it doesn't work. Oh, and yeah, that was the point. That's the Edison light bulb thing. And that is also true of the tennis racket. But let's be honest, if you've got the opportunity to fire potatoes from a cannon through a tennis racket, you will do it.
It's on my bucket list. Yeah. I feel like everyone listening to this right now has probably got an invention that, in their mind, that maybe will never see the light of day. They maybe hope to be on Dragon's Den with it at some point. I have a motorway invention that I have mentioned on the Home Time show before. Can I just pitch you my idea for this invention?
I'm not Dragon's Den, but yes. Well,
here's the thing, right? So long road trips with us as a family, I always find it takes up ages if you have to stop at service stations. It's a real pain getting everybody out of the car with the kids, all this kind of thing. So my invention is this. What if there was like a robot that went on rails on the hard shoulder and it would match the speed of your car, and you could order online on an app, and it would put stuff through, you know, the passenger window, and yes, you can have your food on the move. And let's take it one further, a KC-135 Stratotanker plane that refuels other planes in midair. You could be refueled while still moving.
It's absolutely right, and actually Richard Hammond and I have done this. Motorway, we used to call it air-to-air refueling, and eventually we persuaded the producers to let us try it, and we had a rolling flatbed with an offset cab, and you could drive along and drive onto it.
Wow.
On the motorway and fill your car up and then reverse off, even though you're going at speed, and continue driving. And the secret to it, and yes, it should be done with food as well, I agree, and it's all down to actually... It's basically an app-based thing, because it's about logistics and control. You are going along... Let's say in my case, the M3, which I go along quite regularly, and I think I want the prawn sandwich, and I know the services are coming up, but I don't want to stop. You do a voice command or making up something, whatever is ethical when driving, not playing with your phone, obviously. And then you're driving along, and something pulls up beside you and hands you what you want. It's exactly like a supermarket delivery, but on a very small scale and on the move. I think you're right, and I think it will happen.
Wow, that's an endorsement there, yes, from James.
And we had another invention just now, interestingly, when I entered this building, because somebody very kindly made me a cup of tea, and she handed it to me in one of your, you know, regulation mugs. And she said, oh, be careful, it's difficult to get hold of, isn't it? And it's quite hot. And I suddenly thought, for situations where you have guests who are having cups of tea and coffee, the cup should have two handles.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
Like a tippy, Tommy Tippy cup.
Exactly,
but for
like
grown-ups.
You give for kids, yes.
But it's set at a right angle, potentially.
Either at a right angle or opposite each other. So I give you the cup of tea and it's too hot for you to hold. You can simply put your finger through as well and it doesn't spill and you don't burn yourself, and I get to retreat with dignity.
I'd that's say incredible. In that situation where you're meeting a guest, a right angle, I think, is more... convivial. I think 180 degrees is too kind of like you go there, I go there. Like it's two people
coming
together.
Yes, you could be right. And also when you're drinking, as long as you keep the unused handle away, but if you're other-handed, it might be towards you. But then if they're on the opposite sides, it does look a bit like a tippy cap. You're right,
if I was Duncan Bannatyne on Dragon's Den, I'd have been out by now, fellas. It's a terrible pitch.
Needs thought.
Maybe this is something that we could see in the Royal Oak, which obviously is your pub that features in Shedload of Ideas. This is the second ex-Top Gear pub that we now see. Interestingly, both the Royal Oak and the Farmer's Dog, 4.7 on Google, exactly the same rating as Jeremy's.
Is that right?
It is right. Why should we visit yours before Jeremy's?
It's better.
It's a better pub.
We haven't actually been to each other's pubs. I mean, I'm technically barred from his, but I think he's just being bloody-minded. As I've said to him, it's a bit like being barred from the golf club. I wasn't going to go anyway. I gather that his is very busy and quite, not fractious, but very busy. Mine is quite calm. Both our pubs, it would appear, are now doing quite well. I mean, his definitely is. Mine is is now just, it's a little bit profitable, which is all you can hope for in a pub.
Yes.
We made enough money recently to resurface the car park in gravel.
That's what you aim for, isn't it?
It is. I mean, the best you can hope for with a pub is that it's self-sustaining. You can't go into this thinking it's a great business venture or a great investment opportunity, because frankly it isn't. They are follies.
But at least you're making the chips more cost-effective now.
We're making... I think we have since bought the chip machine.
Oh, right. Good.
To be honest.
Speaking of food and beverages, you've put something on your social media, James, that has warmed my heart and will settle a disagreement that we have on the Home Time show. We're hurtling towards Christmas, which means the reappearance of certain Christmas flavours, which I've always railed against, such as the pumpkin spice latte from Starbucks. You have put up an image on your social media saying they've spelt horrible incorrectly. Talk us through your view of the pumpkin spice latte.
I'm not a coffee drinker, so that's one thing, but I will occasionally have one. And the pumpkin spice thing is a very American thing, isn't it? And it's not pumpkin, it's the spices you put on pumpkin. Is that right?
I think so.
And I'm not actually sure what they are, but as someone who doesn't really enjoy the taste of coffee, I'm very much a tea drinker. So you start off from a low bar, in my case, with a cup of coffee. And then you put this stuff on that makes it taste like, to my mind, a cleaning product or something. And then I think they put on that was a little while back, they put something like pumpkin is so back.
Yeah.
You know, being all cool. And that's why I said they've spelt horrible wrong. You
know, back, finally, we settled it.
It inspired a bit of a debate because people, it's very polarizing.
It is. Well, on our show, Richie loves that stuff.
I
can't stand the Christmasing, Christmasing up of flavours. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I have a bit of an aversion to cinnamon. I think if you put too much cinnamon on things, everything just tastes of cinnamon. It's not subtle.
Well, you've said you're a tea drinker. In fact, on the show, I think you said tools, tea and blokes is all that you need in your shed for greatness. Would you like to go on record as to how the best cup of tea should look?
Oh, are you talking about one of those colour chart things that you see online occasionally? Or
if I was to make James May a cup of tea to encourage great ideas to happen in the shed, how would you want it?
Well, I would want it made of something fairly straightforward but of good quality. So something like an Assam blend or an English breakfast, which is, I think, essentially the same thing. If it's in the workshop, I would like it in a mug. Ideally a tapered
90 degree handles
on each side.
For some reason, and I don't know the science behind it, and this is probably why they exist, but if a mug is tapered towards the bottom, it will have a name, this. That somehow improves the flavour of tea. I have no idea why.
Dark mugs are weird, aren't they? If you have tea out of a dark mug, that's kind of strange.
Tea out of a dark mug or a mug that's too thick. I mean, tea is delicious out of thin bone china. There's a reason we have it, but it's impractical and it breaks and you know, it's ridiculous. So a mug, but not too fat, ideally tapered. I like tea to be made in a teapot. I like the teapot to be preheated and the cup. I like it properly infused and partly out of pure bloody-mindedness, I put the milk in first, because I know a lot of people
want to do it.
But it does make a difference to the way it tastes, because it's the difference between a large volume of hot tea scalding the milk or a small volume of milk being gradually heated by the lower volume of tea as it comes in, if you see what I mean.
So are you high maintenance, James? I worry you're high maintenance.
No, I'm not particularly, and I'm not a fussy eater, and if somebody makes me a cup of tea, I'm so grateful that, you know, even if it tastes of pumpkin, whatever, I'd probably still drink it. But there is a proper way.
There's a proper way of doing it. So your mate, your Top Gear mate Richard Hammond was a guest on Home Time pretty recently, and we played a little game of car snog, marry, avoid with him. So you have to pick a car that you would snog, gets you fired up, a car that you would marry that's kind of dependable, and a car that you would avoid because it's terrible.
I can do that with my own cars.
Please do. So okay. The snog first.
My snog car is I have a Ferrari 458. That's a snog car. The marry car is my Tesla, which is dependable. And I do love it. And then my avoid car is my own Series 3 Land Rover short wheelbase, because it's, I mean, I do love that as well, to be honest. I'm very fond of it, but God, it's an appalling contraption. How anybody ever drove around in one of those and thought, yeah, this will do, because it just, it doesn't even fit human beings. It's not designed for a human to sit in. The position of everything is completely wrong. There isn't room for your legs. You sit too upright. You're too close to the wheel. You're too close to the windscreen. The suspension is awful, the steering is awful, the engine is awful, but it's okay because the gearbox is awful. Everything about it is just, it's a good challenge driving around in it. I use it, we've got a little bit of land that I have to drive across that, gathering up logs and garden rubbish and so on, and then I use it to take things to the dump, which is what people mainly do in the countryside. They take stuff to the recycling centre. And it's good for that, and that's only a journey of about 7 miles on the road, and it's a, I think, well, I need a bit of a challenge, I'll go in the Land Rover.
Keep things interesting. Just so you, just, you know, for complete transparency, Hammond went for Snog, a Subaru Impreza.
Yeah, that's quite good.
Marry a Porsche GT3.
Yeah, he's being a bit pretentious there. that's another Snog in my view.
And avoid a Nissan Juke.
Yeah, he's always had a bit of a thing about that. He absolutely loathes them. It's, I sort of get where he's coming from, but it's not a, there's no, it's benign and bland. It looks a bit ridiculous, but it's not an offensive thing to drive or be in. Not like my Land Rover. And in fact, he should know that, because he's a big Land Rover enthusiast. He should have said, Land Rover Series 3 88-inch soft top, which is what I've got.
Amazing.
Terrible, terrible thing that's been inflicted upon humanity.
One final thing about the show, Shed Load of Ideas. If TV shows were to have a double entendre factor, I think you'd score highly. I saw you facing off a brass rod. You talked a lot about knurling knobs. You knew what you were doing.
No. No, I would never do a thing like that. These are just the correct technical terms for things.
The whole show is three men that should know better. You're in a shed making chips out of tennis rackets.
Yes, you're probably right. But, you know, there's a lot of messing about involved in coming up with the occasional nugget of genius. And history remembers the nuggets. It doesn't remember people making chips with a tennis racket and an air cannon. That's
history remembers the nuggets. That's a great quote.
But the process is important. It's like the process of debate. You need to have it. But people don't necessarily remember all the debate. They remember the final outcome. And so it is with manufacturing, inventing, making, hobbies, and all the rest of it. You don't necessarily see the pain when you look at a nice painting, but it's there. It's there somewhere.
And one thing I meant to mention, actually, before we let you go, obviously, sad news about Quentin Wilson.
Yes, very.
And you spoke, you know, fondly of, obviously, your colleagues and stuff. They, you know, still kind of one big family. How does that feel?
Well, it does feel a little bit like part of the old guard dying out. Now, I did work with Quentin briefly in my first failed attempts at TV. So I was on the old Pebble Mill Top Gear, the Birmingham Top Gear, as it used to be called, for one season, just before it folded. And Quentin was on it at the same time. And he's always had a special place in my heart because I did a little tweet about this. He was the one person who gave me some sound advice and encouragement, which, to be honest, you don't generally get in TV as a presenter. Nobody tells you how to do it. I suspect a lot of people want you to fail at it, but Quentin, in his, you know, he had that very debonair manner of going, yes, James, I know. You'd give me these little warnings about relaxing and not worrying about this and just doing that. And it stayed with me. I thought that was really decent of him. And his advice was good as well. And it stayed with me. His demise came as a bit of a shock. It was actually somebody from the BBC rang me up. I was away a few days ago, and they rang me up and they said, do you want to come on the show and say something about Quentin Wilson? And I said, oh, why? What's he done? You know, and she said, well, I'm afraid he's died. And I thought, good God, that's something that's not supposed to happen.
Mm.
You know, Quentin Wilson, he's supposed to be here forever, and he's not. Mm. I know, it sort of pulled me up a bit. It's, yeah, it's sad.
Yeah.
But he did do a lot of great stuff. So, you know, there is that.
It's been lovely having you in. It's always lovely having you in.
It's always nice being here.
You are the guest that whenever the name is put across the show bows, it's always a yes, no matter what you're up to.
And no matter what rubbish I'm covering.
Just don't go on about the cups again.
I'm going to think about it.
James, we'll go and get your home time keys cut. Take care.
Thank you very much. It's been lovely to be here, as ever. Do call any time.
Bush and Richie's Daily Takeaway.
Absolute Radio.